Welcome to the Before Midnight podcast, the podcast that explores the world of multi-sport. If it has to do with swimming, biking, running, or any combination of the three, we're there. I'm your host, Linda Word, along with my co-host, Brian Schenkenfelder. Good morning, Brian. What's up?
Life is good, man. Life is phenomenal. We're back on track. It's starting to get cold, though.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I don't do well in the cold, but that's the cycle of life, the cycle of the seasons. We're heading into winter. It's starting to get a little cool in the mornings now. What was the low this morning? It was in the 30s.
Yeah, it was a little frosty out. I think it was yesterday morning there was frost.
Did we get frost? Yeah. It's about that time of the year. At least the good news, it's killing all the bugs off. So if you want to go out at night, there's no more mosquitoes.
Yes, that's nice. Now, if it'll get rid of the stink bugs, my God, there's thousands. I've never even seen those things before, and now there's thousands of them
everywhere.
They're
an invasive species, that's why.
Yeah, well, we need to figure out what eats them, because...
and have more of them?
Yuck.
Fortunately, they're not like really grody bugs. They're just everywhere.
Why are they called stink bugs?
Because if you kill them, they stink.
Okay.
So you don't want to, like, smash them because they put off a horrendous odor.
I just leave them alone, so maybe that's why I don't realize that they smell so bad. Okay. Good to know. Don't squish the stink bugs.
No, yeah, you usually just kind of flick them outside, but there's a gazillion of them this year.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
It's really annoying when you, like, open up, like, your sock drawer or something, and they're, like, in there.
Oh,
that's what I get now, because they've gotten in our house.
Oh, okay. We don't have them in our house, thank goodness. Yeah, no. Bugs in the drawers. No, I don't do that.
Like I said, they're not that bad of a bug. They're more like a ladybug than they are like something like a...
Now, we've had ladybug invasions, and they smell. I mean, they stink. My in-law's house was all over the ceiling upstairs. Oh, my God, it was awful. It smelled so bad.
Previous house, we had a ton of ladybugs. Now I've got stink bugs. But they're the same thing. They'll get in your clothes and stuff like that. They just kind of like to hang in. Stink bugs like clothes. So if you have any clothes, they'll just kind of hang in there.
Just kind of hang out. Great. Okay.
I don't know what they do in there. I don't know if I want to know. But
Make more stink bugs, probably.
Make more stink bugs. Yeah, no, it's... but yeah, it's getting colder. It makes it a little bit more... I can't go out for the morning bike ride, so now I have to wait till the afternoons to go out.
That's sad.
Yes.
Then you have to deal with traffic.
Yeah, and I was out riding yesterday, and the traffic was more noticeable. Which means that you're more likely to run into somebody who just goes by you at like a foot, which happened to me. That's what it is. It's all good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just spent a week in Massachusetts, and yeah, I'm glad I don't ride a bike up there. Oh my God. I talked to a cyclist in a bike store. I was like, how do you even get around up here? It's crazy. The amount of traffic. I mean, where do you go? So I haven't had a chance. He told me, he's like, go look up on Ride with GPS and see the maps and stuff. Because I know the area well enough, I could probably figure out where they're going. But to get there, no, thank you. Unbelievable amount of traffic.
I would assume you would probably, in a city like that, you would drive someplace you could ride.
They ride like from that bike store.
Okay.
And there is like a rails to trails, but... they don't ride on that for very long, and I guess they use that to get to other areas.
Yeah.
I mean, just the traffic's insane. You know, if you're commuting on a bike, it's okay. There's ways to do it. But if you want to go ride like we do, go to New Hampshire.
Well, I mean, it's similar to riding in Louisville. I mean, it's a smaller city than Boston, but it's still a similar type of concept. Because when I was at my parents', you would take a bunch of back roads, you'd make it to the park, you could roll through the park into downtown, and that was fairly quick because the park is kind of shut down to traffic in Louisville.
Yeah.
To a great extent. Car traffic is very minimal there. You can get in some back roads into downtown, and then you can go ride in like southern Indiana where it's not as populated.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they do 30 and 40 mile rides, he was talking about, and because the hub of Boston... the suburbs are just as crowded as the city. It's like, when you're in the suburbs, you think, oh, not too bad. No, still pretty bad.
No, I mean, it's the same thing in Louisville. You have to go out somewhere to ride, or you have to drive somewhere where you can start and get out. That's generally the way it works, because you'll have people like will drive out to the East End to ride the Beckley Station and start there and go out. Or people will go to the park, where they can get to downtown and ride southern Indiana, where it's not as trafficky and there's a lot of... You can start getting into the not even suburb, the rural areas, which is ideal for riding.
I guess in that area where I was, there just aren't any rural areas anymore. and all the roads are narrow, and it was crazy just driving around. And people, very different driving. And I grew up there, so it wasn't difficult for me to figure out. People use directionals, which is nice. They want you to know that they're going to cut in front of you. You ignore speed limit signs in most areas, especially on the highway. I mean, there's just no way. So it was wild.
Have to keep up in the flow of traffic.
Yeah. Yep. What else you been up to the last couple of weeks? Soccer finish up?
We've had soccer finish. Yes, we this last weekend we played a doubleheader. It was against teams that didn't have the athletes, so the kids had fun. The first game I felt really bad for the team. It was kind of they had nothing. I mean, it was zero, and it's
were the kids younger?
Some of them were younger, and they didn't have any like athletic kids, because usually a team will have a couple that can make it interesting or at least put some stress on your team, but they just didn't have anything. I mean, Hank, our goalkeeper, touched the ball once or twice that entire game. So I, instead of just running up the score, I'm like, okay, guys, we got a couple people that really haven't scored this year. Let's get them a goal.
Try to
pass it to them in front of the goal and give them a shot. And we almost got some people some goals.
Well, that's good. But at least they tried. That's good.
Yeah, to some extent they tried. To some extent they're like, oh, easy goal. Let me take it.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially my good girl, she likes to score goals. So getting her to like give it to someone else can be a challenge sometimes.
Yeah, that's all right.
But my son was like, come on guys, let's give it to them. And they were trying to pass it to them in front of the goal. It was hilarious. Second game was a little bit better team, so we couldn't really do that, but they really didn't threaten us either. They had a couple kids who could kind of play, and they at least got a goal. But yeah, it was kind of, they could get it down under our side and just kick it hard. Mm-hmm. And if it went on goal, they may have had a chance. If not, it went out of bounds and we got the ball back. But it was good. Yeah, it was good to see. The kids, man, it's always, they start to figure it out. Although they weren't as sharp because a lot of them had missed practice and last game and stuff like that.
Oh, well, so, also had it fall break. How many of your kids were missing?
So usually you end in a strong note. Now we kind of ended in a mediocre note because of fall break. I had people miss the previous week. I had three people show up for soccer practice, not including my son, because he was out of town, too.
Oh, that's right.
So, yeah, there's a little sloppiness in the end of the game, but they played fairly well. They started figuring it out toward in that second game a little bit. But, yeah, we last game in those smaller fields, now we move up to big boy football.
Big boy soccer. So they actually keep track of the scores?
They start keeping track of scores. Much bigger field, much bigger. Probably 2 to 3 times bigger field than what we're playing now.
Oh, wow.
So it's going to be much bigger goals, too. So a lot of things increase in size.
Huh. Hopefully the children grow as well.
Well, and that's where you get into the interesting thing, because I've got the girl on our team who's really good and has the talent to play at the next level. Coming back really isn't going to do her any good, because she's already one of the better players in the 6 and 7 year olds.
Okay.
But she'll be 7 in the spring. Does she... The director gave her the option to come up. She's like, yeah, she's ready to play at that level. But the questions become, now you're going to be playing with 8 and 9 year olds, so you're going to be playing with some people that are probably 10. So you're talking about much bigger.
That's a big gap.
Kids.
Yeah. 7 to 10. I mean, girls tend to get a little taller, a little faster than boys, so she may be okay, but she's still going to be one of the smaller.
It's more a question of, it's not a skill question, it's more of, when there's contact, there's going to be some pretty good-sized kids making physical contact with you.
Well, hopefully she's soccer. Little enough and fast enough to dodge around them. I don't know.
Personally, I think she's small enough that if she gets knocked down, it's not going to hurt her.
Well, that's another way to look at it. Yeah.
7, 8, 9 year olds, they get knocked down. They're like, they're back up and running because they're
already low to the ground.
They're low to the ground. They're not, they don't weigh a ton. The question is the physicality going to be too much? And I don't know if it will be, because I think the field's going to spread out more. I think there's going to be a lot more. If you do it right, there's a lot more space, and so you don't get that pack mentality as much. Because that's where you end up with all the contact. These fields are so small. These kids are all so tightly brought together that there's going to be contact just because they're so close together in such close proximity.
Yeah.
But in a field that's much bigger, if you're playing right, you can create a lot of space for yourself to get passes and give yourself opportunities. And if other teams are going to play pack mentality, yeah, they're going to get crushed yeah. when there's space. Because yeah. I can kick it way out there, and all of a sudden we're on fast break time.
Yeah.
And we got people rolling down the field fast break, and yeah, good luck stopping that all the time.
Yeah, they're all clumped together at the other end of the field.
So I'm excited about the next, because a lot of the things we've been working on will carry over into that and will really begin to show itself there much more in this one. Because when the small compressed fields, setting your players up in position and trying to get them to score is still really effective strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to that next level, that becomes much harder because you got to be much more creative with all that space.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more to it. You can't micromanage on a huge field like that as easily as you can on the small field.
Yeah.
Although the coaches try, I was watching some of it. So the next level is, and I watched some of it, is very much you've got four or five really good teams and four or five really bad teams.
Ooh.
And I don't think there's a lot of in between.
Ooh.
And you can kind of tell the difference because the coaches of the better teams are the micromanagers, like the professional wannabe coaches. That's like pervades youth athletics. And it's like, oh. Those are the parts where you're like, youth athletics, I really am not interested in. Because that's when once they start keeping score, then the parents start getting hyper aggressive too.
Yes.
And that is when it gets over
the
line.
You know, I mean, you've got the balance of you've got to get every kid in so that every kid gets to play, and then you have the parents that get upset because the score's not high enough, and yeah, fun times.
Or they'll try to coach from the sideline and throw them to their side. Oh, go get it, no one else. I was watching, it's like, go get it, no one else on your team's going to get it. And it's like...
Nice.
It's like, this is the parent mentality starts happening at that level. Ooh. And, you know, and the coaches get all... I mean, they were yelling at the kids, and it's like, oh my gosh.
That makes me sad.
But I mean, that's how you end up with the World Series for Little League, because you got all these hyper competitive coaches pushing these kids to play this, or gathering the elite talent and putting them together, and it's too much. Let kids play. I've never understood that mentality, but it's not the kids' mentality. It's the parents who make it all happen and push it and all that, and it drives me nuts. But That's just me. I'm a little different. I'm like, let the kids play. Yeah. Once they get older, let's get hyper competitive. Once you make it to high school, I don't feel sorry for anything anymore.
Time to grow up at that point. Yeah.
We're old enough. Yeah. We're 14, 15. Now we're old enough to handle it mentally, playing at a high level and competing at a high level and taking it to the next level. Yeah, kids, just let them play. I don't understand the need to
8, 9, 10
drive skills at that level. It's like everything else. The kids who are elite, the kids who are going to be the best in the world, will naturally show up. Just because you're playing 24/7 as a kid doesn't mean you're going to be an elite athlete.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, when I grew up, it was the kids who played 5 and 6 sports, they're the ones who dominated once they got into high school. An elite athlete is an elite athlete. It doesn't matter really a lot, to some extent, what sport they're
what
playing.
What they're doing, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's some skill, you know, some sport, gymnastics or something. Yeah, you know, you've got to.
They peak at a ridiculously young age.
Yes, they do.
But, you know, basketball and football, all those sports.
All the ball sports.
The guys who dominate are generally dominating.
Doing all of them, yeah.
They're playing all of them or dominating and can dominate multiple sports.
Yeah.
They're not just dominating in one sport. They may play one sport and they dominate that sport. But if you put them in another sport and gave them
they're
going to be one of the best ones in that sport, too. That's the way it works. Yeah. Genetics matters in athletics.
Yeah.
It's not the sole determinant, but it is a major player.
Yes. Yes. You can train a lot, but, can't train genetics.
No. Lots of crazy. But it's going to be fun. We're merging with another team, so we should have a lot better players for that next level.
Who are you merging with?
Some of his old friends.
Okay.
Team. The team that brutalized us at the beginning of the game.
Oh, okay.
Had a lot of talent.
Gotcha.
We're going to merge with them. And bring
some of our
better players and his better players together and have a good team.
Good.
And then it'll be fun. That'll be fun.
That'll be nice because, they all know each other.
Yeah.
So that'll be exciting to play together for once. Yeah.
Yes.
Instead of against each other. That was just kind of sad.
Yeah. When Alex is playing against all his friends, that's kind of brutal to some extent.
Yeah.
Especially when
so
you don't have enough other kids to support him to take it to him and give him a game.
Yeah.
It really was just a numbers game at that point.
That was a sad game. Yes. Felt so bad for him, but not anything anybody could do.
Oh, no. I mean, it's just... It's the way of the game. I mean, at the end of the day, athletes matter much more than coaching.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At the high school level, that actually kind of flips a little bit, but for the most part, athletes still matter. At high school, coaching can matter because you're getting to the point where strategy and things like that, you can take advantage of better athletes if you know like the skills and the strategy of the sports. A team can beat a bunch of individuals. So coaching can begin to matter. Now, once you get beyond high school and back to college, now you've got the kids who have all been well coached and understand the game. And then now we're back to the point where athletes more matter than coaches.
Than coaching. Yeah.
But at the high school level, and that kind of is where coaching can matter, because especially in team sports, because a well-coached team is going to beat a lot of times a team with better athletes who is not well-coached.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, and that's why you end up with some like schools where a good coach comes in and wins a state championship, and a school that never really had state championships because they're a good coach.
Because it's a good coach and knows how to pull everybody together.
Pull everybody together and have a team. And then, you know, you might have a couple good athletes in there too, and he can get that mixture and get a state championship.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, where'd that come from? I mean, there's not never that much talent before. There. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an interesting, but yeah, once you get back up to a higher level than that, then it's about athletes again. Much less about coaching. So, I mean, if you want to be a college coach out there, it's all about recruiting. Much more so than your ability to actually coach them.
Yeah.
More about the Jimmies and the Joes than the X's and the O's. Is what they call that.
Oh, my goodness. Anything else going on?
No, it's been a crazy week. We've also had one of our outbuildings burn down, mysteriously. Of course, it's great when the fire trucks all pull up, and we had some old burn pile out there. We had burned some stuff weeks ago.
Yeah.
In the last 2 or 3 weeks, it's been extremely dry, extremely hot.
We didn't have rain for almost 40 days, I think.
And there was a burn ban for a good 3 or 4 weeks now. Maybe two weeks. It had been two weeks
when that burn ban happened.
And it had been 3 or 4 weeks before we had burned anything.
Yeah, you'd had at least a week leeway from the time of
the burn ban and last time something was burned. So they come rolling up, and they immediately think we were burning something and caught everything on fire.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my God, we're going to get arrested.
Well, funny thing is, you know, the same thing similar happened at my house or my neighbor's house, and he wasn't home, and he had burned a week before, I mean 2 weeks before, but his fire came back to life. Yours did not, because it was a whole separate building.
Yeah, it was centered around that building.
Like that dry, that anything, you know.
So. And I had been with that one. It was different because it was buried stuff, so that can handle.
Yeah, the guy had no idea what was underneath there, and
stuff can slow burn. They had like tires and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that stuff can all slow burn. But we had just wood that was sitting on top of the ground, so there was no under the ground.
Yeah, you didn't have leaves. You know where ours was? There was like leaves everywhere. I mean, God knows how deep it was, and it just crept under the ground and decided to come back to life 3 weeks later,
which is crazy. But yeah.
Yours was completely different.
Yeah, it was centered around this little outbuilding
that had never had any fire anywhere near it.
It didn't have any electricity to it, didn't have any chemicals, so yeah,
no suicidal squirrels holding onto two wires, you know.
No, that was an interesting one. I have a theory now that someone was probably taking a break in there in the shade and may have been smoking something and dropped something and accidentally caught stuff on fire.
Which wouldn't take much.
But yeah, it was mainly that building that burned down, and there was a couple hot spots around the building. So that makes me think that it probably was something that happened in that building, and you know, maybe some dude was cooking his lunch or something. I don't know. But it was crazy because it happened right after I came back from a bike ride. So I'm almost wondering if it wasn't somebody just hanging out smoking something, you know, maybe some weed or something like that. Who knows? I came rolling through on my bike, and it kind of like, oh, there's someone here. Let me go ahead and leave. They leave whatever burning. I get done showering. I walk outside, and the fire trucks are pulling up in my driveway.
And the building's fully engulfed, pretty much.
And it was starting to get engulfed. Yeah, there was a lot of smoke coming up, and I'm watching it, and I have another stable, bigger building that we have, like, stuff in.
Yeah.
The more important building.
Actually important stuff.
Yeah, this was like a little open barn area that they kept like a tractor in years ago. So there's no doors to it. It's kind of open.
Oh,
so someone could sit in it. Which is why I
never really
happening.
Noticed it, so I didn't realize. I don't even know what it looked like beforehand because it was behind the trees.
Yeah,
I never
there was no doors.
That.
It was just kind of an open shed
type
barn that had a roof and side, you know, three sides.
It had three sides. Okay.
A little bit of a fourth side, but yeah, the door was just open. Huh. And then we had a more important building. I thought that was going up because it was starting to roll and
Thank
flame as they were
didn't.
Getting going. Yeah. I mean, there's a chance we could have lost the whole hillside and our house and everything else if they hadn't gotten there in a while. I think they would have probably kept it under control. We may have lost that second building or a big chunk of that second building, but I
probably would not have lost the house though. They would have gotten here in time. I mean, they were paying attention. They saw the smoke and came up, obviously because you didn't, you were in the shower.
Yeah, they came up quickly. I don't know if I'd ever seen it because I don't really have any windows that
probably would have smelled it. Maybe
at some point, maybe
we lucked out because it was a friend of my neighbor that drove by. And saw the smoke and called him. And I was actually on the way to Alex's soccer game. That's right. And I get the call saying, hey, are you home? And I'm like, what's going on? He's like, there's smoke. And I'm like, shoot, I'm across town. So I called my daughter and she's the one that found it. And I was like, oh, crap. We got to put this out. Because it was right near the woods.
Yeah, that becomes a bit of a challenge.
But yep.
It's crazy stuff, man. It's been a fun... Wild
fun
2 weeks, man.
Yeah, it has.
We got fall break had happened. Kids
and then
back to school,
we lost the distraction in your house, and it moved to my house. Thank you so much. All the,
that's right. We had kittens.
You had kittens, and now they live with me. I'll tell you, if you have kittens, you just don't get attached to anything because they destroy it all. I mean, you don't get attached to getting sleep.
We never had problems with the cats, kittens, and sleep.
No, they're usually up at about 2.
Yeah.
That's when they wake up.
They run around.
They run around, wake you up, knock stuff over. They haven't broken anything yet. The big catastrophe, when I was out of town, my daughters were home, and they knocked cookies off the table, and the dog ate them, and my daughter was flipping out that her dog was going to die from eating a bunch of sugar cookies. And I'm like, no, as long as they weren't sugar-free sugar cookies, the dog will be fine. She might poop a little weird for a couple days, but oh, big trauma. So it's been entertaining. Great waste of time in my house.
Generally, the kittens just tear up, like, cloth stuff, cloth furniture.
Yeah. I've had to kind of wrap my curtains around the curtain rods and stuff like that because they're about to take everything down, but it's so much fun having two of them.
They play with each other pretty well.
They beat the crap out of each other is what they do.
That's playing. They're teaching each other how to attack. Yeah. They're teaching each other to hunt things.
Yes.
That's what cats do.
They're going to be great hunters. My dogs, on the other hand, are going,
cats are always great hunters.
Alrighty. Well, we'd like to thank our sponsor, 3-Sport Endurance, formerly Small Batch Coaching. 3SE works with endurance athletes for short-term competition goals and long-term athletic lifestyles. They focus not just on the end result, but on the training process that makes an athlete a better competitor. 3SE develops personalized workouts along with mental training to prepare for an event, as well as off-season specific skill practice to round out an athlete's entire year. 3SE works with athletes of all levels, from a beginning 5K runner to Ironman athletes. Find out more at go3sport.com. So it's been a busy weekend in the world of sports around here.
Yeah, the world of running, biking, and swimming had a lot of interesting, mainly running and triathlon.
Yeah.
We had the world championships in triathlon. We had some records broken on running. So it's been kind of a crazy last week for the world of endurance sports. Endurance athletics.
It must be that time of year.
And then the men's world championship, he broke the record in Kona.
In Kona? Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't realize that. I didn't pay that much attention to Kona this weekend. I was traveling a lot. I was coming back from Boston, so I was a little out of the loop, but trying to keep up with it. So what happened in Kona?
The world championship was the men's side. The men's side is becoming a little more interesting. Well, not really interesting. It's becoming a little bit more like ITU in that the swim is becoming more important. Because the biggest problem I have with Ironman, and you see this on the more on like the women's side right now than the men's, is the swim is almost irrelevant, and that the faster people coming out of the swim really just don't. It's not a big enough gap. 4 minutes on the swim is huge because it's not a very long swim. But when your run times are 10 and 15 minutes apart in a full marathon, it's just not enough time.
Yeah.
But it's becoming more important because you start to see the times begin to matter a little bit more, especially on the men's side. Because on the men's side, you had four or five that came out of the water early. Like, they did a 47-minute swim, which is just ridiculous. That's like averaging 1 minute hundreds.
Remind us again, how long's the swim?
2.4 miles.
Okay.
Just to bring it back to someone who swims 100 yards in the pool, that's about a minute 100 yards. A little over a minute, like a minute five, average 100 yards.
Okay, just thinking about my times and what. All right.
I mean, that's like me.
I'm still swimming.
I mean, these guys are swimming what I might be able, I can't even sprint that fast for 100, just in like my best 100 times are like 110 in a race, 100 yard race. So they're swimming faster than my fastest swim time.
That's crazy.
For 2.4 miles and get out. But they end up with a pack, and what you're getting, what Ironman has become to some extent is you get pack racing on the bike. They can't really draft off each other, but they still form packs, which allows them to kind of work with each other and kind of stay away. You can't draft, but you can still kind of chase each other and work with each other to go forward.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. I mean, we're together. We can use each other to pacing off each other and stuff like that. So Jan Frodeno, Tim O'Donnell, there were a couple other people, including Alistair Brownlee, who was the gold medal ITU winner. This is his first time in Kona. So there's four or five of them that came out of the water at the front. They jumped on the bike and stayed away from everybody else, dropped some of the people who came out with them in the swim. I think there were four of them that came in together for the run.
Okay.
And Alistair Brownlee, who is, like I said, the ITU guy who's won multiple times and the fastest ITU in the world, he ended up falling apart on the run.
Oh.
Which is probably not surprising. That's the first time he's raced at that distance.
Okay.
But the fact that he came out in the swim and came out in the bike in the front just means it's a matter of time and he's going to win that race.
Yeah.
Because he's probably the fastest runner in that group.
Okay.
Fastest runner probably of any of them in a standalone race. So it's just a matter of time. Because it's the first time he's moved up to this distance.
Okay.
You're talking about a long way from...
Yeah, from a half to a full.
Yeah. He was doing Olympic distance. Yeah, he's the one who ran the 20-minute, 9-minute 10K in the Olympics, which is ridiculously fast.
Yeah.
So someone who's that fast, once they can get up and put all the pieces together,
he will
probably do very well
in
the world championships in a few years.
Yeah.
He's still determined, trying to figure out if he's going to do the 2020 Tokyo Olympics next year instead of, or is he going to stick with long distance racing?
Yeah, that would be a good question.
So he's still hadn't decided that. I think he finished second in the half distance. So he's, like I said, these guys, they make their speed in ITU and then they come to long course and they start bringing that speed to long course.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think you're starting to see that kind of like, if you're not able to come out early and get in with some of those early bike groups, you may not be there for the run. You may be far enough behind that you're not going to catch.
Yeah.
Because the first and second place were in those groups. So the Jan Frodeno, the one, the German who won, Tim O'Donnell, the American who finished second, they were together and basically they biked together. They came out in the swim 7 seconds apart and then they were about 2 minutes apart on the bike because the Frodeno guy, he basically made his move in the last 10 miles of the bike. And gapped them about 2 minutes. And then went out and ran a 2:42 marathon.
Oh my God. It's insane.
Second place, Tim O'Donnell ran a 2:49. So, I mean, you had to like be able to catch them on the run. And third place guy, who was 5 minutes back on the swim, picked up 3 minutes on the bike. He's like he's one of the super bikers, Sebastian Kinley, and still ran like a 2:49 marathon. He just couldn't you can't close him down.
Yeah.
Because these guys are now all running within about 6 and 7 minutes of each other. And then Ben Hoffman is another slow swimmer who wasn't a strong biker, tried to run his way back in, but he ran a 2:43 marathon.
Holy cow.
And finished 50 seconds behind Sebastian Kinley for fourth, another USA guy. He's a fast runner, but he's not as strong a biker.
Right.
And you can't be that anymore, I don't think, and win the race.
Yeah.
It's becoming more like the Olympics where if you're not out in one of those front groups and get in those bike chase packs. In the Olympics, it's much crazier because you're actually drafting. So if you miss, you're done.
I didn't realize Olympics was draft legal.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that is very much, you've got to be an elite swimmer. That's why Alistair Brownlee's coming out in the front of the pack on the swim. He's an elite swimmer.
Yeah.
And an elite runner.
Yeah.
So for him, he's just got to figure out how to get that bike up to there in that situation. And yeah, it's all over. So you've got, God, they did 416 on the bike, 418 on the bike. So that's like, you start doing the math on that, that's like a 26.2 mile per hour average on the bike.
In the mountains.
After swimming a 105 average, 106 average in the water, they're now doing 26 miles an hour on the bike for 112 miles. I
can't do a sprint.
I try to wrap my head around that. In a sprint race, I mean, I'm an okay athlete. I'm not elite by any chance. I'm averaging 22, 23 miles an hour. These guys are averaging 3 miles per hour faster. Instead of, I'm doing 12 miles, doing 10 times what I'm able to do at a speed I can't do.
Yeah, it's insane.
And then come off and run a 2:42 marathon.
What's the pace on 2:42?
It's a little over 6, like 6:05, 6:06, which I can't even run a mile at that pace.
Yeah, no, I can't.
I don't even know if I can do a 6:05 mile.
I think I can do like a
6:20.
I think my fastest mile, and I stacked the deck, was like 6:43. I mean, that's just crazy that they're running 26 that. Wow.
After doing the bikes. Yeah. I mean, we're going to talk about the world record running is they just broke 2 hours. But they're only 42 minutes behind after doing a 112-mile bike ride.
And a two-mile swim.
And a two-mile swim. The swim is just a different sport. But
the fueling, everything else.
Go out and ride your bike for 4 hours and then try to run. And tell me what kind of run you do. It's crazy.
Yeah.
The women's side is not quite there yet. The girl who finished second, she came out 5 minutes ahead of the first place lady in the swim.
Wow.
She was not very far behind the men.
She's a phenomenal swimmer.
Big swimmer. Great Britain. Again, I think she's a pretty good Olympic distance racer. So she came out 5 minutes ahead. And then actually, over the winter, she then picked up another 2 or 3 minutes on the bike. But then the run matters. Ann Hogg, who the German, ran a 2:51 marathon to her 3:05 marathon.
Oh man.
So she got run down. And then she barely held on to second place to Sarah Crawley, the Australian, who ran a 2:59 marathon.
Wow. That's still just remarkably fast.
Yes. The women's side, that shows you that the swim just doesn't matter as much as the run does.
But still 5 minutes ahead on the swim. That's impressive.
Yeah. She's one of the fish. There's a couple. She came out with someone else who didn't finish anywhere near the top. Usually, if you follow the history of it, there'd always be swimmers that came out minutes ahead and then immediately got killed on the bike.
Yeah.
So as you begin to see the swim, as these times start coming closer together among these elites, the swim begins to matter a little more because you can't afford to drop 5 or 6 minutes. You can, apparently, on the women's side still. But on the men's side, that's a big gap. I mean, because the women had, second place was 6 minutes back, third place was 2 minutes behind her, and then 3 minutes behind her.
Women traditionally, though, are not cyclists. I mean, it's still a relatively new sport for women.
Well, but then if you start,
more of a history with swimming and with running.
But you start looking at the men's side, like first and second place was 8 minutes difference. That's a pretty good gap. Second and third was a little over two. Third and fourth was 50 seconds. Fourth and fifth was 3 minutes, and then another minute and 40 behind that. So, I mean, this is now starting to get to the point where these times are compressing.
Yes.
More so, like I said, on the guy's side than the women's side yet. Yeah. I'm not sure the women's will get there eventually, but the guys are starting, these times are all starting to compress together, which means you can't have a really weak swim anymore and expect to win.
Yeah.
You just can't.
Yeah.
You can't have that weak bike and come back
a discipline that you're not good at.
Well, I mean, Miranda Carefree, who was the Australian, she was a super runner, man. She still holds the Ironman women's time for the marathon. She did she ran a 2:50, 2014, when she won it all, which is a pretty fast time.
Yeah.
Let's see, the winner this year was 2:51, so within a minute of her, which is a pretty good run.
Yeah.
She was able to overcome the fact that she wasn't a good swimmer and biker with her run.
With her run.
But anymore, there's no way.
Yeah.
She's got to be much closer because on the women's side, they were 4 or 5 minutes down on the swim. The group that beat her was 5 minutes down on the swim, but it took the run to catch her. I mean, almost Hawaii record or Ironman record to pass her and stuff. So it's slowly becoming that you can do that. But yeah, the fourth place lady, she swam a 59, so she was 10 minutes back, and that cost her because she couldn't close the deal on the faster swimmer.
She was 10 minutes slower on the swim?
And she was 5 minutes slower than the third place swimmer, so she couldn't close that down.
Yeah.
Because she was still 2 or 3 minutes behind.
Yeah.
So now we're getting to the point where you can't be just really terrible at any of these events like you used to. Because Miranda Caffrey was an example of that. She just, especially the bike, she just wasn't very good on the bike at all. She was a decent swimmer, but she just got dropped on the bike. I mean, she'd run her way into wins. And it took her a couple years to win because one lady came in and started being a really good biker and a pretty good runner, and just she could never catch her.
Yeah.
And then the other lady, after like 2 or 3 years, decided to quit. And then Miranda Caffrey won that next year.
It's all about who shows up.
Once again, telling you that a lot of times it's about who shows up on race day.
Yeah.
So it's becoming a little more interesting in that you can no longer be weak if you want to win at the highest level on the swim. But it used to be the swim didn't matter as much in long distance racing, and it still doesn't for the average person.
Yeah.
Because you're only out there for an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes. And if I'm spending 5 and 6 hours on a bike, and you're looking at 3 to 4 hour type run frame, 2 minutes behind somebody on the swim just doesn't matter. Just doesn't matter.
You can catch it up.
You can catch them up. But in the elite level,
cyclist.
At the elite level, it still matters. Mm-hmm. As we see, the swim still matters because you're too close together. You can't afford to give away 4 or 5 minutes in any of the disciplines.
Crazy.
So Kona's always fun. It's not very good to watch.
It's not very good
to follow because it's an 8-hour race. But it's always interesting to look at the results and see what you can learn from them and just marvel at their speeds, which are just, I just can't wrap my head around it. And you think about how great that is, and then you start thinking about your elite cyclists are better athletes than these guys. And it's like, I just don't get it. I don't know how these people do these things they do.
I don't know. It's exhausting to even think about. We were going to go yesterday and watch them in Louisville, but I'm kind of glad we didn't. I'm just too tired even thinking about it.
Yeah, in Louisville, our local Ironman ran yesterday, and they had some misfortune. They had to cancel the swim because of an algae bloom in the river.
Because we haven't had any rain.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that contributed to that a lot.
Oh, I'm sure.
But, yeah, green bad algae.
I didn't even know the river had algae. But I knew, like, the lakes and stuff do around here.
I always thought it was, like, a red bloom. This was a green one. Yeah. So, either way, EPA said, you're not swimming this event.
So, that's all these people that have prepped for the race, one race. They don't get to swim. There's going to be a lot of mad people about that, I'm sure.
You know, I mean, they didn't have a choice.
Can you call yourself an Ironman if you don't do
this?
Oh,
my God. That's a big topic on Facebook. Can I get the MDOT tattoo if I haven't done the swim? Oh, my God. You know what? You do whatever you want.
And that's what a lot of people will think. They didn't do the swim. Therefore, it's really not an Ironman race.
You know, you have these purists that you've got to do everything right.
It'll be a big debate.
It is, yeah.
And to be some extent... You have completed the Ironman race that was set out before you, but did you do an iron distance triathlon? No.
No.
Because you didn't do the swim.
You can go to a... I know, I heard somebody was like, I'm going to go to the pool and go swim beforehand or something. I was like, really? All right. Well, so they can call themselves an Ironman since they couldn't do the swim.
I mean, technically you're an Ironman because they own the rights to it if you've completed their race.
Yeah.
So you completed the race as the challenge in front of you. The swim just wasn't part of it.
Yeah.
This day. So, but technically, no, you have not done
a full distance triathlon.
You have not.
Let's call it that way.
Full distance triathlon.
Because you completed an Ironman, just not a full distance. There you go.
An Ironman really is a corporate brand anyway. That's all it is.
Yes, it is. There's a lot of debate on that as well. Opinions on that, I should say.
At the end of the day, it's a full distance race. You do full distance races. Because technically, if I go and do a third party full distance race, like I remember when Rev 3 ran them, when I'm done, I technically can't call myself an Ironman.
Right. Because it's not an Ironman race.
Yeah. The whole Ironman concept is really annoying because it's not real. It's a full distance triathlon.
Yeah.
It's really.
It's a corporate brand.
Which just cracks me up to people like, hey, I'm going to put a corporate brand on my leg.
Like, I like Coca-Cola. I'm not going to put that on my leg just because I drink it. Some people might. I mean, you know.
But I mean, that's,
I like Dunkin' Donuts.
How awesome. What a corporate thing that your corporate brand is so good that people want to put their brand on. They want to brand themselves with your brand.
Forever. With that tattoo. Yeah. I can think of other things I want to put on. But
no offense to the people that do that, but yeah. When you think about it from a macro perspective, it is kind of funny. You're basically
putting their logo on yourself. Great advertising. I mean, marketing genius.
I mean, I understand why people do it. They want to mark the accomplishment, but I would try to find something better for me.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, I completed the Boston Marathon. Lots of people do that, and so they, you know, will put the Boston Unicorn, you know, as a tattoo, whatever, because they completed the marathon, that marathon, you know. I get it.
Why don't you just tattoo the time on there or something?
I'm not putting my Boston time on there. My Boston time stunk. I'm much prouder of my qualifying time. Thank you very much. I'd rather put the Chattanooga logo on me as a tattoo than
there you go.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would do. I'm considering it. I haven't done it yet. But I don't know.
Like Austin, Massachusetts. It was from
from a lot of movies.
No, it was Road Trip.
Okay.
It was a great scene where like the guy had sent his girlfriend a video of him like with some other girl that he met at college, and he was going to go intercept it before it got to her.
Oh.
Which is all, there's the whole story of them going down there and travel, but the guy who's behind who's going to feed the snake while they're gone, because they have a snake, and he's kind of like the guy who's been in college forever and really doesn't know anything. Because the movie starts with him giving a tour, and they go around, and this building was built in the 1800s, and it's like, why does it say 1956 on the building? He's like, that's the address. That's how the movie kind of starts. So he's kind of like that type of guy. Yeah. He's been on the campus forever. That's why he's giving campus tours.
But doesn't know anything.
He doesn't know anything. And so the girl is like, kind of finds out, he's just getting a new girlfriend. And she like finds out that he's going to find his other girl.
Oops.
And she gets mad.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, where'd he go? And he's like, because they were going to Texas, which is in Austin, Texas. And he's like, Austin, Massachusetts. So she goes up to Boston, Massachusetts, and finds like the girl who happens to have to share the same name or something, and beats the guy's car up, but it's not his, it's someone else. And then she's like, oh, and then like leaves and goes back. But that's why every time I hear Boston, Massachusetts, I think Austin, Massachusetts. Austin,
Massachusetts. Yeah. No, there's an Acton. There's a few other A towns, but no Austin that I know of. Oh my gosh.
Road Trip. That was the movie. That's kind of my movie tangent for the day.
Thanks for sharing, Brian. Appreciate it.
I do like the building number. I was like, no, that's the address.
That's the address. Yeah.
Not the date it was built.
All right. Well, that's the other thing. Let's see. We did the under 2 hour full marathon. A human being has actually managed to do that. It's the first time it's ever happened.
In a very sterilized event, but it's still impressive to break 2 hours in a marathon. Because he had like, what, seven people in front of him, like some people in front of him and some people behind him.
Total of 41 pacers. Okay. And they did a 5K each. And there were seven with him. And they rotated through.
So they did every four. And these are all marathon runner types anyway. They're so all they like were 5K Olympic really caliber. Wasn't that big of a deal.
No.
To do multiple 5Ks for them really wasn't a big deal.
He averaged a 4:34 pace.
Yeah.
13.1 miles an hour for 26.2 miles.
It was a flat course.
It was flat.
It was, again, he had people around him, so he was getting a draft out of it. So it wasn't as hard as if he were running it alone.
I mean, everything was set up. They didn't even know when the official date was going to be until the weather reports came out.
Yeah.
It was going to be sometime this month.
In this time frame when it was the right temperature. I also noticed that Ineos was the sponsor of it.
Yes.
Because they were all wearing the Ineos stuff, which if you paid attention to our our coverage of the Tour de France, Team Ineos was the leading cyclist team. Apparently, Ineos is a massive petrochemical company.
Yeah, a lot of people don't like them, but boy, they're putting a lot of money into sports.
They are putting a lot of money into endurance sports because now they've put money into running, they've put money into cycling, which are probably the two biggest endurance sports. Cycling being bigger than marathoning, but from a money standpoint.
From a money standpoint. This was impressive. I mean, this, everybody was watching. So it was
And he was wearing Nikes?
He was wearing Nikes.
He was not wearing the Vaporflies.
He was wearing the next generation that nobody else has except for him. Yeah. So
the next percent, which is the one I've been testing, and we'll talk about that another week.
Yeah. Those were worn by all the Pacers. Ulid was wearing the next generation. Something about possible airbags or something. I don't know. They all kinds of secrets about those shoes.
There's a lot of secrets about the shoes because people are trying to replicate it. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the major brands are putting carbon insoles into the carbon plate. I don't think that carbon plate plays as big an effect as people want it to make. That's not the reason the shoe is fast. The reason the shoe is fast is for other reasons. Well, like I said, we'll talk about the shoe later because I have some data now that I've got a pretty good idea of what the shoe's doing.
Yeah,
and it's interesting. It's a very interesting shoe. It's going to be interesting for people who train as well. If I'm not sure it's a shoe that you can just go and race in after having run in it, and we'll talk about it later. I think it's a shoe you're going to have to train in after I've run in them and seen what the data is on it. But we'll talk about that again some other time.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if this record, if somebody will be able to do a sub-2 in an actual race.
It'll probably take a few years, but it will happen. It's like when Bannister broke the 4-minute mile. Everybody started doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the same thing. Once you've reached that psychological barrier, people think they can do it.
I mean, this guy held the world record already at 201.39, I think, something like that.
It'll probably take a while because this is that whole marathons are not necessarily time trials.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a I'm going out, I'm holding this pace, let's keep going type thing. But marathons tend to be races, so they tend to start out a little bit slower than someone who's just going out and setting a record.
Do you think it'll be him?
Could be. It could be someone else.
I'm just thinking the whole mental game. He's done it. He knows he can do it.
The question is can you do it?
And he also still had energy at the end. I mean, he sprinted at the end.
The question is can you do it in the next two or three years? Because he's probably only got about a four-year window to do it in.
He's 34 now, I think.
But if you look at marathoners, they only have about a three-year window where they're good.
Yeah. I think if he does it, it'll have to be next year.
I mean, you don't see marathoners who win big races and then 5 years later win those same big races again.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, marathoners, they have a small window where they're elite and then they're never there again.
Yeah.
It's really weird, but it is. Because an Ironman, for Dano, I think that's his third or fourth one he's won. And that's been over a 6 or 7 year window, which is much bigger. And you begin to see some of these windows in cycling as well has it. But running just doesn't have these long windows of dominance.
Much shorter period of time. Yep.
Oh. It's just kind of a weird phenomenon of I think it's just because it's so hard on the body.
Yeah.
You can't make, cycling and some of those others, you can kind of maintain for a little bit longer stretches of time.
Yeah, because it's just not as hard.
Not as hard on the body.
Another reason to get into triathlon.
It's another reason to mix your sports.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why, in Ironman, they can do it longer because they don't run as much as runners do.
Well, I've heard it said by different people that have been successful in marathon and successful in triathlon that just running a standalone marathon is harder than doing a full Ironman. No. Just
training might be.
maybe it's training wise, but it's mentally tougher. Yeah.
No, Ironman is all those problems you have in a marathon show up in an Ironman in a much worse way because most people go out too fast. And so they hit that wall. They don't hit the wall at mile 20, they hit the mile mile 2 and mile 3. So, I mean, you imagine when you have stuck in a marathon and you get to that point where you're walking and you're just kind of.
And it's mile 3.
And it's mile 3. Yeah. Welcome to Ironman.
Yeah. I really have no intention of ever signing up for one of those.
You will. I won't, but you will.
I don't know. Maybe when I hit 60.
So it'll be interesting to see if he can do it in this window he has to dominate. A lot of it's going to be because a marathon is about winning. So it's much more dependent upon what your opponents are doing a lot of times and what you have to do. Because if someone goes out maybe real fast and early, you may want to stay with them so that they don't just leave you behind and say bye-bye.
Well, I wonder what this...
And a lot of times they'll jockey for position early in races.
I wonder what him doing, accomplishing this is going to do to just, the field in marathons. He was able to do this. Maybe I can do it too. So maybe it won't be such a race. I don't know. It's
but they all jockey for position in it. It is a race, and it's, a lot of times they start off really slow too, as they kind of get a gauge for each other. Yeah. So it's kind of that makes it hard to where like he was just going out, and I'm going to hold this pace. So we'll get warmed up, we'll get to this pace, and then we'll just hold it. Mm-hmm. Much easier to do than a marathon, because that's not necessarily a winning strategy in marathon.
Yeah, true.
Where you sit in a pack, you draft off each other.
And then somebody breaks out.
And then someone breaks out, usually later in the race. No one usually runs away in mile two or three.
Not usually, no.
Not usually. It's usually later in the race. Let's see who's got the juice, and they go.
Yeah. And then see who can hang on to them.
And then who can hang on the longest. It's interesting. It'll be broken. It might take a few years just because the dynamics of marathons are a little bit different than just going out and trying to set the four-minute mile. Because, I mean, how long did it take before the four-minute mile got beaten like a competition?
That's an interesting question. That's a good question.
Let's go look that up. Anyway, what else did we have? We had the women's world record set too, didn't we?
Yep, women's world record was set in Chicago.
Not a completely flat course.
No. And I mean, that I've never run Chicago. I know a lot of people who have. And sort of that last stretch always seems to catch people by surprise that, oh, it's uphill. What the heck?
Not big hills in Chicago, but it's
still.
It's not like Berlin. I think Berlin, the flat one.
I'm not.
Indy's pretty flat, too.
Indy's very flat.
I think Berlin's the other real flat race that a lot of records were set at.
Yeah. She managed to do 2 hours, 14 minutes, and 4 seconds, which is more than a minute faster than 2:15:25 was set in 2003 in London by Paula Radcliffe. So Kosigi was pretty impressive.
Yeah, world records at that distance tended to drop by more than, usually not drop by like 1 or 2 seconds, like the 100-meter sprint is.
Yeah.
Tenths of seconds.
Yeah.
Longer distance, so yeah, they can fall a little bit faster.
It's just interesting it took so long, you know, that record stood for so long.
How long did it stand?
2003.
Yeah.
So 16 years. That's pretty long to have a record.
I wonder if so much of that is, again, kind of like the dynamics of a marathon racing and pacing off of each other. Yeah. Well, I would think the women would have a little bit easier time breaking each other's records just from the standpoint that they could pace off the guys in those races. Because don't they go off the same time, the guys? Or they go a few minutes behind?
No, usually they go before.
Before?
Mm-hmm.
How much
before? I'm not sure. I want to say in Boston it was 5 or 10 minutes.
5 or 10 minutes. But they're going to get caught by the top guys.
A friend was mine was in Chicago spectating, and the pictures that he got of her, she was behind two guys. They either caught her or she caught them. I didn't catch the numbers, so I don't know.
So they probably caught her, and then she probably just lobbed on to somebody.
Yeah, but she finished it. You know, they make sure that the elite women finish on their own. You know, they're not. It's happened that guys have broken the women's winners' tape. That doesn't go over real well.
I'm sure some. That might be one where the guys, if we're running next to them, will. Just back off, because it doesn't matter as long as placement isn't involved. Because the elites, you know where you're placing.
Yeah.
The problem you could potentially run into is if the woman was like on two guys who were competing for like third place or something like that in a marathon.
Which happens, maybe not in the elites, but...
No, maybe down like in a smaller race where, you know, they're all coming together at the same time, you could have a potential problem.
I didn't even think about that looking at all the results. That's why they don't put them all in together. I mean... They said, well, yeah, when you're looking at the women's elites and the men's elites, when you look them up, they don't have them overall by time combined.
The women usually are way behind the top men anyway. I mean, because we're looking at the Chicago results. Yeah. She would have finished, what, 23rd in the race?
23rd, yeah.
So there had to be a gap at some point.
Yep. Really big weekend. Fun times.
It's crazy. Next weekend shoes was she wearing?
Good question. I did not see that.
Is she wearing the Vaporflies?
I don't... Well, she may have been wearing Vaporflies, but not the same Woods
was wearing. That was the one thing I wanted to... I wasn't able to find out about Kona, because I think a lot of the racers there were wearing them. It's a shoe that has become very popular all of a sudden.
For obvious reasons. Yeah, they just talk about it being... I'm sitting here trying to look it up real quick and don't have that information. We'll have to look that up,
and when we talk about the Vaporflies, we'll... Yeah. We'll see if we can get numbers on what people have been wearing at some of these major races, if we can. Because like in Kona, they tell you what bikes everybody has.
Yes.
But we can't get shoes.
That. Can't get shoes.
Easily.
I can't tell from her winning picture, but they could be.
You need a side picture.
Yeah.
You can very much tell from a side picture because they got that back section that sticks out, that pronates out, that no other shoe has.
Oh, yeah. It's very obvious whenever I see pictures of them. Okay.
We'll have to get some of that information in. Because I want to talk about the Vaporfly sometime soon.
Yes, anyway. She was. I forgot.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, there's she was definitely yep. having. She had the pink ones.
Yep. And so did the guys in front of her. Both of them. They all had the pink ones, which is interesting. Nike's just doing one color for those shoes.
Well, they've got the green ones that I have. They probably don't have a lot of colors.
Probably not. But it's interesting that the guys are wearing pink.
It's probably the shoes they gave out for that race.
Good point. Yeah. I don't know how much Nike is the sponsor, but...
Because it allows their shoes to kind of stick out, probably.
To stick out, yeah.
Rather than like a green that like a lot of other people have.
Yeah. Yeah, not too many guys are wearing bright pink shoes. Unless they're the Nikes.
So it's... I don't know what the numbers are for Kona. We'll get that in. We'll see if we can find that information out.
Yeah.
And bring it. But it's interesting. It is.
I wonder if Nike will sponsor our podcast if we keep on talking about their shoes.
Yeah, let's call them. Like... Give us a little money, man. I guess we shouldn't be talking about their shit.
Yeah. I wear Brooks. Just saying.
I'm wearing Newtons right now. So my comparisons against the Newton, which is always interesting. But we'll bring that up in I don't know if next week, it might be the week after, but we'll circle back around now that we've got all these world records falling and shoes that were designed by Nike.
Yeah.
Are they faster?
Only time will tell.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for listening. If you're looking for a coach, give 3SE a chance, and we will talk to you next week.